Your life is precious. This is it. You've got one shot at this. But is there a sense on the inside that you're capable of so much more? If so, the Missing Secret podcast is for you. The book Think and Grow Rich has been read by over 150 million people. It's the top book in the world on success by a factor of 10. In the book, it says there's a secret for success, but the author only gives us half the secret.
When I turned 50, I figured out the full secret, the missing secret, and developed a 12-minute-a-day technique to apply it. And it caused my income to go up by 25 times over the $200,000 to $300,000 a year I was making in the prior 20 years. I felt so blessed.
When John taught me the missing secret, it changed my life, doubling my income and dramatically impacting my health, relationships, and quality of life.
Today, most people are just winging life. They don't have anything pulling them forward to their desired life.
Leverage yourself through science. It takes 12 minutes a day. Watch what happens.
Welcome to the Missing Secret Podcast. I'm Kelly Hatfield.
Hey, and I'm John Mitchell. So we got a very interesting show today. And the topic is the power of talking to yourself in the second person. Now, anybody that's doing our methodology knows that basically our methodology has been built around talking to yourself in the first person. I do this, I'm that. And one of the things I became aware of, this is research out of Stanford, and a lot of you may know Andrew Huberman, who is worldwide known as a top health expert. Kelly, do you know who have you heard of him before?
Oh, yeah. Yep. He's pretty prolific online and, you know, and with his neuroscientist background and, you know, what he speaks to, he's really well known online in the.
You know, I sort of think that Peter Attia and Andrew Huberman are the top people in the world on health and also mental research. Joe Dispenza is right up there, but Huberman is the man. Mm-hmm. And so I want to play about 3 minutes of the opening of this video, and I think it will blow you away, and you'll see why we're making a change to think it be it. So we started from the beginning here.
The way to yourself changes the way your brain rewires itself. It's not just psychology, it's neurobiology. And in just 3 days, you can start to reshape your internal landscape. What if I told you that your internal dialogue, the words you use with yourself, has a direct and measurable impact on your neurochemistry, that it affects your levels of dopamine, adrenaline, and even GABA, the primary inhibitory neurotransmitter in your brain? For 3 days, I want you to run an experiment. This is not positive thinking. This is self-directed neuroplasticity. When you deliberately change your inner language, you're tapping into the prefrontal cortex, the anterior cingulate, and the insula, areas of the brain responsible for self-awareness, emotional regulation, and motivation. What we say to ourselves, especially under stress, can either spiral us into a fight or flight loop or activate calm, clarity, and focus. For the next 3 days, I want you to do 3 things. Speak to yourself in the second person. Say, you've got this, not I've got this. Studies show that this shifts your brain out of ego-based self-critique and into coaching mode. You become your own guide, not your own critic. Start your morning with identity statements, not goals. Say, you are someone who keeps promises to yourself, not I will go to the gym. Identity is sticky. It wires deeper into your neural circuitry than intention. Catch negative self-talk and label it, say, that's a thought, not a fact. This activates your prefrontal cortex and gives you distance from rumination. This isn't motivational fluff, it's neuroscience. The brain listens, the body responds. And after 3 days, just 3, you'll begin to feel the shift, less reactivity, more clarity, more energy. You'll start to become the voice you needed to hear. When most people engage in internal dialogue, they default to first-person language. I'm anxious, I can't do this, or I need to be better. While this might feel natural, studies in cognitive neuroscience and sports psychology reveal that this internal narrative style is actually limiting, especially under conditions of stress or high cognitive load. Shifting to second-person self-talk using you instead of I creates a psychological buffer. This shift activates brain circuits associated with perspective taking, specifically within the medial prefrontal cortex and temporoparietal junction. These are regions responsible for distinguishing between self and others, but they also give us the ability to step back and coach ourselves through difficulty. So instead of saying, I can't do this, you say, you can do this. The change might seem subtle, but the effects are profound. When you use you, your brain responds as if the guidance is coming from someone else you trust, like a mentor or coach, which increases compliance and decreases resistance. This shift in perspective has been shown to improve self-regulation, boost emotional control, and enhance problem-solving under pressure. Athletes use it, elite military operators use it, and we now understand the neurobiological reason why it works. Second-person language decreases activity in brain areas associated with self-critical rumination and increases task-oriented focus. From a biochemical standpoint, this can reduce cortisol release and...
So he goes on and on. This is about a 25-minute video on YouTube, and I'll put it in the show notes for this, but pretty mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I was fascinated by this and listened to the full, you know, it's close to 30 minutes a couple of times this morning when she sent that to me. And I thought that was so interesting in like the science part of it and just the part of your brain that recognizes the language, you know, distinguishes between the individual and it coming from, you know, external and how your brain receives that differently.
Right.
I thought that is fascinating. And then I kind of started thinking about some of my own, you know, kind of self-talk, you know, that was, you know, we were just visiting a little bit about this offline, but, you know, related to business, saying, man, I'm so frustrated. And then, you know, being able to turn that and reframe that language into you are somebody who has done hard things before and you can get to the other side.
And frustrations occur. And when they occur, here's how you handle them.
Exactly.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, he gets into it, I don't remember if he covered it in the short clip I gave you, but it's all about identity. Like, and we've talked about this before. We've really been talking about it the last couple of weeks. You take actions, your long-term actions always reflect your identity. And, you know, it's interesting how this works is that your self-talk creates your identity. That's what it is. Most people have a sort of a broad understanding of their identity, but when you do like our methodology, you're taking that self-talk and you're getting every syllable right and fine-tuned. And then when you feed it to yourself, that self-talk refines and determines your identity. And I was thinking about this idea as Huberman has made me think at a deeper level, just from another perspective, seeing that perspective of you versus I. And I've sort of come up with this over the last week or so. In you, there's two parts. There's the doer part of you, and then there is the observer part of you. And the doing part of you is the I. The observer part of you is the you. And the observer is setting your standards, in my view. As you're like doing our methodology, the you part of you is developing that template and defining your identity in each area of your life and getting down to the nuances. And then once you've got it on the template, your identity is on the template, then you just feed that to yourself every day. In approximately 21 days, that identity that is on the paper becomes the identity that you are. I mean, that's how I see it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I see it the same way. I think, you know, where there is now a little bit of, you know, where I'm thinking, okay, so we're using a lot of I statements inside, right, you know, the visualization. So
right,
are you then thinking about changing, you know, the viewpoint, the vantage point, you know, inside the visualization then?
Absolutely. I've done it, and I've been doing it the new way for the past week, and it is pretty cool. Yeah, I can feel it, and it's not that hard to change. You know, I mean, it does take a little while because you got to now go in, and there's eyes all over the place.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a good exercise to watch the shift. You could even take your life GPS template and give it to ChatGPT, and it would make the changes. But it's not perfect. And it's just sort of easier to just, okay, everywhere I'm saying I'm going to say you. And it might change slightly something else that is in there. That's why I say it might be easier than letting ChatGPT do it all. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's so powerful. And this is probably the biggest innovation in Think a Bit in 20 years, I would say. Mm-hmm. Ever since I started doing it, I have always known of the science, and I'd then observed the research that was done. But in this video, and also one almost identical with who was the other?
Joe Dispenza. Yeah.
This is like the most powerful science behind our methodology to date. I mean, never had like really one place where you could get all the science and the proven science. And why does, you know, self-talk impact your physiology? You know, he gets into it in excruciating detail, but it is so true that your identity is determining your long-term actions. Now, your identity probably doesn't necessarily determine your short-term actions. I mean, you can, you know, move a glass from one place to another as a short-term action. But if you're talking about, like, as an example, say in health, and you say to yourself, you're a person whose identity is you own your health and you own the fact that you exercise 6 days a week. And here's what you do 6 days a week, and you're specific about it. Then, you know, when you don't feel like exercising, you're by God going to exercise because that's your identity. It's not like this is, you know, I'd like to do it, but I don't feel like it. There's a lot of times that you don't feel like stuff. And so I just think it's a powerful concept, and we ought to lean into it.
Yeah, I think so too, because I think if you just, given that statement, you know, the difference between I and someone who, you know, I can't remember exactly what you said, but about the exercise six times right, a week, I'm someone right, who's focused on my health and interviews, sorry, my brain is somewhere else, and exercises, you know, 6 days a week. That goes back to that, like, intention.
Right.
Yeah. And so it feels different than when, you know, I'm reading my visualization and my GPS life template, and it says, you know, you are someone who is health focused, you know, and makes healthy choices, you know, 80% of the time, you know, or exercises. Right. You're somebody who deeply cares about your health and your wellness. You know, and therefore you exercise six times a week, and you know, whatever the case may be, feels very different than I, for whatever reason. Well, he shared the science on why the reason that is.
And
well,
you know, what's
what I like too, though, is that if you are out of congruence, you know, mm-hmm, so let's mm-hmm, say that I exercise five times this week or whatever, like, it gets you out of that kind of intention. You know, like, I have the intention of doing this, and versus when it's you, for whatever reason, it just feels like that's so much more stronger and more closely tied to your identity than I, because I still kind of feels like it's an intention versus identity.
Yeah, I think that's the essence of what he said, actually what he said, that in the I, it's the intention, and in the you, it's the identity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, think about this. I mean, I haven't thought about this, but you're great to bounce this off of. Let's let's say that in my visualization, I say I exercise 6 days a week, and it's Friday. I'm doing it like Monday through or Sunday through Friday, so I'm the last day of the week. And let's say I don't feel like doing it. Let's think what the effect would be if in the Life GPS template it says I exercise 6 days a week and I don't do it. I'm like, okay, what's the effect on me? Well, I'm going to feel some guilt. I'm going to feel some guilt, but I know I'm feeling it because I am so locked into doing what I say I'm going to do, especially to myself. So that's very identity associated. Now let's see if I said it differently. You exercise 6 days a week because that's your identity. I think it sort of has the same effect on me, but I also think that what you said is exactly right. I is more intention. You is more identity. Do you see any nuances to that?
I do. I think one of the nuances that I see in terms of this being more sticky, where identity,
yeah,
the phrase identity is more sticky.
Right.
Is you spoke to this a little bit, and I don't necessarily think that this is, in thinking about it more deeply, necessarily, this is what kicks people off track.
Mm-hmm.
Which is when you are saying I, you know, and it's an intention, and you get to that fifth day and you don't feel like doing it the sixth day, and so mm-hmm. you don't, you not only feel guilty, but there's a judgment of yourself that goes along with that, which can right. start a cascade of negative thought, like, oh, I didn't, you know, I didn't do what I said I was going to do. And I, you know, and it starts this whole like kind of right. process in your head that isn't necessarily good from a self-talk standpoint, you know, versus, you know, when you are phrasing it where, you know, you are somebody who, you know, is health conscious, treats their body like a temple, you know, and so therefore you exercise 6 days a week and you, you know, make the healthy choice with food, you know, 90% right. of the time or whatever, then I don't know it. In the moment, I definitely may make better decisions, but I also think that because it's coming from the external, like a coach, or
yeah.
that it doesn't feel there like there's as much self-judgment and as much, because I think that's what gets people thrown off track too. Because
right.
what Huberman's saying is, you know, if you keep saying this to yourself, like it will. Like you will start falling into line. You know what I mean? You will reprogram your subconscious to do the things that you want it to do. And I just think that when I'm thinking more deeply about it, again, I'm still processing because I just listened to this.
Right.
But I'm thinking about those I statements and how the lack of congruence when you're not doing something that's an I statement, how that can totally derail and take you back to that subconscious, all those old patterns and everything where, you know, so anyway, I'm not sure quite what I'm trying to say. I'm more thinking out loud, but, you know, right. related to this, but it is a fascinating concept that I want to continue. I want to experiment with and continue to, you know, talk about and understand a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, you'll like it. You'll like the change. Again, I've been doing it for a week, and I even have gotten, you know, in the AI algorithm, I had that done by a group of tech wizards in Europe. And so I now have gotten them to change the algorithm. They're changing it next week, in fact, mm-hmm. maybe some this week. And so we're going in this direction quickly. In fact, I'm teaching my class, think it be it, in 2 weeks. So I have a little pressure to get it like it needs to be long term. And so, but the other thing he's talking about, how a thought, like if you have a negative thought, just to identify it as a negative thought is not a truth. In fact, you may want to put that in your Life GPS template. When I have a negative thought, identify it simply as a thought, not a truth. Mm-hmm. That's powerful. And he says that one second time frame to just identify it will change how you react to it. Like if you don't take that second, then you assume that whatever the negative thought is a truth, when in mm-hmm. fact, it's not a truth. It's just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was powerful.
I thought it was extremely powerful. And then already today, you know, I've used, you know, that, you know, where I'm like, this is just a thought, you know, it right. is not fact. you know, right. And where then it snaps you back into the out of rumination, out yeah. of, you know, and brings you back into the present to go, no, this isn't a fact. It was just a thought that came up. It was specifically related to AI and a conversation that was being had with a vendor around it. And
right.
And, you know, and so I had this kind of like, you know, moment of like, huh? And, you know, it was like, that's just a thought. That is not fact, you know?
Right.
And then it allowed me to kind of move forward past that moment.
Right, right. Well, this is all very fascinating. And again, I'm going to leave the show notes. I'm going to give you two videos, one by Huberman and the other by Joe Dispenza. I mean, this is really at the essence of self-talk. And you know, I have this idea of self-talk is interesting how, and I'm going to talk to my class about this tomorrow, about how everything in life starts with gratitude. Everything truly starts with gratitude. And then gratitude leads to inner peace, and inner peace leads to mental toughness, and mental toughness leads to achievement, and achievement gets us back to gratitude. And like we were saying offline before you came on, I see that a lot of people deal with negative thoughts and negative inner voice. And I was telling my class last week, I said, you need to be pissed about that negative inner voice. You're not putting up with it. I mean, you need to hate that negative inner voice. And I said, you don't need to hate it today, but you need to hate it two weeks from now when I teach you this methodology, because we're getting rid of it. You're not taking my damn class and walking out of here with a negative inner voice if I can have anything to do with it. But you know, at the end of the day, they gotta embrace that hatred for that negative inner voice that I have and you have.
Yeah.
But I'm like, people, you're gonna live your life not being your own best friend?
Yeah.
Man, this thing's too tough to go through life without being your own best friend. Man.
You know, it's interesting, and I can't remember which coach, but it's a prolific coach in the sports space. He himself is a former athlete, and I can't think of his name right now, but he has this exercise that I took our whole team through that's related to identity. And one of the things that you did, you know, you did your best self, like, so you, you know, created a character, maybe, basically, you know, and used the words that best describe, like, the best version of yourself. And then you did, you know, so like your true self, your best self.
Right.
Then you did your anti-self. On the other side, which is all your negative thoughts, negative voices, and you gave that an identity. And what the really cool thing was, so that when something negative would crop up, you know, in your mind, or there's a behavior that's not congruent with like the best version of yourself,
right.
You can name it, and it would take it outside yourself, so you weren't judging yourself. So you could say, like in my case, this is not related to the way that Karen is used in today's, you know, vernacular. But I had this Barbie back in the day, me and my best friend, we had this Barbie and her name was Karen, and she was the ugly Barbie. And
yeah.
Like neither of us wanted her. So whoever had to play with her was really like, you know, pissed. And we would, you know, there was just something about Karen that none of us liked, and how Karen was, you know, so my negative self, you know, in naming it was Karen, you know,
right.
Another person on the team, because that was just a name I don't like and I have a negative association with.
Right.
One of my other team members, was into like Disney and all of that. And her negative character was Eeyore, because that was when she would show up at her worst. She was kind of like the downer, the Debbie Downer of the group and everything.
Right.
And so it was then fun when you recognize that language, or, you know, your internal thoughts, to go, oh, that's just Karen. She needs to shut up. You know, like you were.
But doesn't that give that an identity?
Yeah, that's what I mean. The whole point of it was to like pull it outside yourself to see it for what it was. And it's real similar to like when you have fear or something show up. For me, I'd be like, oh, I know exactly what that is. That's my brain trying to pull me back into old,
right. Yep.
You know, patterns and everything. So sometimes when you can name it, you know,
yeah.
And what it does is it does exactly what Huberman was talking about, is it allows you to recognize it when it shows up, and then to discount it and to be able to go, get out of here. You know, you're not my friend. You're not my, you know, and so it was just a way to name it, you know, to be able to recognize it. Because I think that, you know, as much as we talk about, you know, we talk about it with your students, they're quick to say, yes, I have a negative inner voice. I think that sometimes when we're talking to our more adult people,
or right,
we're more mature, they're less likely to recognize how negative negative self-talk shows up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's not in, you're such a loser. You know, you should be further along by now.
Right.
You know what I mean? It shows up differently, I think, with the younger group.
Right.
Than it does necessarily with somebody who's further along in their life.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing that always catches my attention, and this is true with Huberman and Joe Dispenza, is they tell you about it, but they don't tell you how to fix it. Well, that's fine, because boy, think of it is the fix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By God, I would put it against anything out there. I don't even see anything out there that even is in close to think it be it. Of course, I'm biased, but I really don't. And if there was something out there, I'd be good. But what can I learn from them? But
yeah,
literally, there's nothing out there that I see that is teaching in detail the proper self-talk. But the essence of these videos is really the power of retraining your biology and rewiring yourself through self-talk. And it's so profoundly impactful. So, okay, until next time, we will see you.
Thank you for listening to the Missing Secret Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about this 12-minute-a-day technique that gives you control over your life beyond what you've ever experienced before, visit themissingsecret.org. That's themissingsecret.org. Sign up for a free video that reveals the full secret of Think and Grow Rich, and purchase John's book, The Missing Secret. Until next time, be the exception. Work smarter, not harder, by leveraging yourself through science. It takes 12 minutes a day.